The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Men of Letters, a supernatural podcast.
This is Dad's single most valuable possession. Everything he knows about every evil thing is in here. He's passed it on to us. I think he wants us to pick up where he left off. You know, saving people, hunting things, the family business.
Storm's coming. You boys, your daddy, you are smack in the middle of it.
House rules, Sammy. Driver picks the music. Shotgun shuts his cake hole.
No chick flick moments.
All right, jerk.
Bitch.
That Constance chick, what a bitch!
Or you think it's shooting Casper in the face, you freak.
Eat me. No, wait, you actually might.
Hope your apple pie is freaking worth it!
All right, Men of Letters, Season 1, Episode 2. Hello, Supernatural fans, and welcome to the second episode of Men of Letters, a Supernatural Retrospective Podcast. We are hosts Tim and Katie, and in this podcast episode, we will be covering Episodes 3, Dead in the Water, and 4, The Phantom Traveler. How are you doing tonight, Katie?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I cannot complain. Just ready to talk some Supernatural.
Good time. What's that?
Me too. Now let's pause for a quick commercial break.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Dave.
Okay.
What?
What do you mean, what? Why do you sound slutty?
I was trying something new. You didn't like it?
No. No, I did not. Did you think it sounded good?
And this is Dave.
Boy. All right, we're from Sequel This, a show where we attempt to write sequels to some of your favorite movies, such as Ghostbusters 3, Goonies 2, and Gremlins 3.
Well, you can check out all of our shows over at sequelthis.podbean.com. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, all the major pod places.
And if you can't find an episode that interests you, or you have a great suggestion, or a pitch yourself, we want to hear it from you. So please, email us at sequelthis@gmail.com and drop us a line.
And remember to flesh it out.
What's wrong with you?
Everything and nothing.
Now let's roll that promotional commercial for Dead in the Water.
In the coming weeks on Supernatural.
People around me keep dying.
I think I know how you feel.
This isn't a creature, we're dealing with something else.
Lucas!
There's something going on with the lake.
It can get to anyone, almost anywhere.
The new series Supernatural, next week on the WB Tuesday.
Oh, crazy. Okay, so Dead in the Water was directed by Kim Manners, written by Sierra Gemble and Ronell Tucker, with an original air date of September 27, 2005. Taking a break from the search of their father, Sam and Dean head to Lake Manitowoc in Wisconsin for a possible case. Three drownings have occurred within a year, with the dead bodies mysteriously disappearing into the lake. The brothers soon come to believe that an avenging spirit of a young boy haunts the lake, and they learn that the local sheriff, played by Daniel Hugh Kelly, and the father of the latest victim, accidentally caused his death when they were children. Out for revenge, the spirit targets the sheriff's daughter, Andrea, played by Amy Ecker, and mute son Lucas, played by Nico McGowan. It eventually pulls Lucas into the lake, so the sheriff gives himself over to the spirit to save his grandson. So let's talk about the episode Dead in the Water. Okay, so what were your initial thoughts, Katie?
Well, you know, I watched it like twice within the last 2 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely liked it better the first time, I think.
Yes.
I liked it, but I didn't feel like it was as well executed as it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the story was good, and Sam and Dean are always good. But I don't know. It just wasn't.
Something felt a smidge off a little bit from the first episodes. It wasn't a bad episode per se, because we'll get into those later. But it definitely wasn't 100% on the mark, as they say. But I liked it. I didn't love it. there are obviously some really good little tidbits in there. There's a couple of Star Wars references with Sam and Dean impersonating the wildlife service agents Ford and Hamill. And then the kid named Lucas, named after George Lucas, the godfather of the Star Wars films, the creator. But yeah, it was odd. But there was one of these, one of my favorite moments was when it was the line of the episode. And I think that's something we won't do for every episode we review, but there was a line of the episode where it was my favorite part, and it was by Amy Eckert, actually, the guest star, playing the mother.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. She says, she turns to Dean, she goes, "It must be hard with your sense of direction, finding a way to a decent pickup line."
I know. I totally was like, I gotta remember that. It was so good.
I know. It was such a burn, and Dean is just left totally dumbfounded. And then there's a little bit of banter between Sam and Dean, and where he sees Dean's talking about, "Oh yeah, kids, he loves kids." He goes, "Name even three kids that you know."
I know three kids.
Yeah, he just kind of walks away. Oh, but yeah, that was probably my favorite part of the entire episode.
Yeah,
and
I kind of liked how they referenced Jaws a little bit there.
Oh yeah,
because it was like when they're the girl was in the lake in the beginning. She's swimming after she dove off the pier, and then you just kind of look up at her, and I'm like, I thought that was very Jaws.
Yes, I can definitely notice that a couple of the camera movements that they used in there were very Jaws-esque.
Right.
Especially coming from the POV shots of whoever was the avenging spirit, I guess. And you could see what they were seeing. That was very cool.
Yeah, I didn't say that.
Yes, and what else? Oh, and that I love the scene even before that where you see them in the diner, mm-hmm. and they're looking for a possible case, and you see Dean and Sam, and Sam is getting pissed at Dean, he's not taking this seriously enough, trying to find their father, and the waitress walks by, and Dean goes, "Sam, we're allowed to have fun every once in a while, and that's fun." there's a lot of those little nuances that just kind of makes me fall in love with the show all over again.
Right, because you take those small little snarky comments or innuendos and things, and that's what kind of makes up the base of Dean's character.
Oh yeah,
and it's characteristics I enjoy in other people.
Right.
I breathe sarcasm. It's second language for me.
Right.
But yeah, and those kind of little things, I love that stuff. Sam is just it's just a nice kid.
Yeah, and I love how the murders and the drownings build. First we have the attack in the lake, which is somewhat believable. But then the second death of the son being getting drowned in the kitchen in the sink,
that really crushed me. I was like, "What are you doing?"
Right. And then,
first off, no teenage boy is going to stick his arm in the sink to find out what's clotting it. Not any of my kids, anyway.
Right.
No, I've been in a cabin. I know that the sink backs up. And how do you get your arm that far down and your head into the water to get drowned?
Right. And I thought, okay, all right. But there's the recurring line and theme throughout the film, and the episode, where and it's said by Will Carlton, and it's also said by the woman who I think it's Mrs. Sweeney, the one that lost her boy, and it's losing a kid is or losing a child is worse than I think death itself, and that the first time you hear it, oh, yes, it's heartbreaking, and then the second and third time you hear it, it's like, okay, they're, you know, obviously they're building on something here, and I really like that little tie-in together. But and then even the sheriff, Jake Devins, played by Daniel Hukeli, I thought he did a pretty good job, and he looked from very familiar to me. I don't know if you recognize him from any other previous TV shows or films at all.
He looked familiar, but mostly it was Amy Acker that I really noticed.
Yeah.
She's been in a ton of stuff.
Yeah, she was in Angel and
Alias,
yes, but
and, Person of Interest.
Yes. And I really like her as an actress. I always thought she was cute and, you know, a very talented actress in her own right. But Daniel Hukeli was... I'm a fan of, like, old 80s TV shows. So, do you remember... yes, no, it was Hardcastle McCormick. Do you remember that TV show at all?
What was it called?
Hardcastle and McCormick.
I don't think so, but you're older than me.
Yes. Okay, so if you're a kid of the 80s, like I was, or the late 70s, whatever. Hardcastle and McCormick was about a race car driver and a judge. And he drove, a Ferrari, I believe. And they raced around and they solved crimes. It was only on for about 3 seasons, but I remember watching it as a kid, and he hasn't changed like at all since the 80s. I mean, he looks almost identical, the same. So I just thought that was kind of a cool album, a cool little nudge. And he also played the Vic Trenton in Cujo, if you remember Cujo.
Oh yeah.
He was the. The father of the little boy and the mother gets terrorized by the big puppy.
That's right.
But that's what I thought was pretty interesting. But so we come to learn that the boys are investigating the disappearance, and they realize that they talk to the sheriff, and the sheriff is like, "We dragged the lake. We couldn't find a body. It was crazy. We even used sonar and nothing. It's just like they disappeared off the face of the earth." And so when they talk to the son before his death, they go out to the house and they want to talk to the father. And he's like, "My father's already talked to the police before. He just wants to be left alone. Is there anything I can help you with?" And they talk to him, and they say, and he says that, he saw her swimming out from a distance, but then he something like pulled her under, but he didn't see anything at all. No shadows. There was nothing along the shoreline, like either the person got in, or the person or the thing got in or out, leaving a tracks or anything. Right. So it was just at this point they don't know what it is, and I think at one point they assume it's a water wraith or something like that. A demonic thing.
And then they had, there was a few jokes about, like, the Loch Ness Monster thrown in there. And
yeah, Nessie. You
know, that kind of thing. Yeah, right.
Yes, so the boys are, talk to the sheriff, and Amy Eckert's character, Andrea, and Lucas come in to the small-town sheriff, she brings her father like lunch or whatever, and dropping off Lucas so she can run some errands. And we find out that that there's been other disappearances over the last 30 years or so. In fact, one of the victims was Lucas's own father, who took him to the lake maybe 2 years prior, or a year prior to this, and they were out on the in the lake and swimming, and he drowned, and Lucas witnessed this from like the pier or from the floating raft or whatever, and that's why we find out that Lucas is a mute, and it's some sort of post-traumatic stress where he can't speak. So
I don't know if I'd want to speak after something like that.
What's that?
I said I don't know if I'd want to speak after something like that either.
Right. And so, but the thing is, he's very big into, we come to find out he's very big into drawing. He draws these pictures that are clues that the boys follow.
It's like in the beginning, it's like that foreshadowing.
Right.
You know, kind of like you notice it, but they don't notice it just yet. And I think when the Winchesters end up at the park with Lucas and his mom, and then he's, you know, he was like, I'm going to go, you know, talk to the kid. Is that okay? He goes over there and he draws him this picture, and kind of Dean opens up about his childhood and, you know, draws him this picture, and he's kind of confused about it at first until they start driving around town. And was it the house first?
I believe so. I believe, yeah, it was the house of the daughter. Oh my God. Bill's daughter. Yeah. There we go. Bill there.
Right. And then her brother.
Right. Correct.
Their house.
Yes. And then, he gets, Dean puts that together when he looks at the picture that's in that Lucas draws him and he pulls it out of his coat pocket after they've talked to Bill or Will and it doesn't matter.
I don't know. But I think they go back and they try because they want to talk to the father again about his son dying now, and that's when they notice.
Right, right.
I think they start to get suspicious of something happening.
Yeah, I believe it's. I mean, I'm sorry. I believe it's Will Carlton is the brother, and Bill Carlton is the father, because there's Sophia who's the first victim in the episode, and then yes, Will. But yes. Excuse me. So yes, and then. After that, then they go back to Lucas, and Lucas gives him another picture of the house next to a church, and then we realize that brings us to Mrs. Sweeney, the little boy Peter that we end up find out that is the little boy that drowned in the lake, or accidentally killed in the lake,
And they ask, you know, the reason they found out is because Lucas drew that picture and he put a little boy with a blue hat and a red bicycle in front of the house, and so then they have to go after, you know, Mrs. Sweeney about it.
Yeah, it was there.
That's one of the parts I liked about the show. Like if they had done this whole thing on like more of the drawing kind of a deal and like the mystery behind this kid and. You know, the mother, that part I liked about the episode, but some of the, like, water stuff, like you mentioned with the sink filling up and pulling the teenage boy into the sink, I think that's just was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was kind of a stretch, even for me.
Yeah.
And so after they visit Mrs. Sweeney, the boys head back to the Carlton's house, and we see Bill not on the pier like he was, but he's actually in the boat, and he's crying. He's like, come on, take me, you know, this has got to end, you know, whatever. And the boys race out to the end of the pier, and the motorboat, the fishing boat or motorboat, gets, like, thrown up in the air like an explosion, and Bill goes into the lake, never to be seen or heard from again. The boy.
And that's when, okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, and that's when. And then the boys go back to the sheriff's station and they talk to Jake. And Jake says, you know, yes, I, you know, you expect me to believe that Bill Carlton, who grew up in this town and lived on this lake and was a very good swimmer himself, went into the drink and that's it. I don't buy it. It was the only reason you're not in jail right now is because there was a bystander that saw you guys there as Bill disappeared, whatever. And then we've come to learn out that that Sheriff Jake ran a background check on the boys, and he realized that they're not really the agents that they say they were.
right. And then he's just like, get out.
Yeah, kind of like flexing his muscle, saying, you know, this is my town. He's like, He goes, you got two options. Door number one and door number two. He's like, door number one, I arrest you and throw you in jail. Door number two, you put this town in your rearview mirror and you never look back. So,
right.
Sam goes, yeah, we'll take door number two. He goes, that's the one I'd pick. And so the boys leave, but you could tell that Dean, and especially Dean, he really he doesn't want to leave. He feels that that there's more to this,
because they're going to like turn out onto the highway, but then he's like he changes his mind and he comes back into town.
Yeah, he's got like this gut feeling, this hunter's gut feeling that something's unresolved. He goes, they need to take care of this. So they end up at the doorstep of Lucas's house, and they're about to press the doorbell. And we realize that before that, we realize that Andrea is about to take a bath, and she gets. She's sitting in the bathtub and she gets sucked in by Peter's avenging or the spirit, and it's trying to drown her in the bathtub. The door is locked. Lucas comes running down the stairs as Dean is about to push the doorbell. Lucas opens the door and frantically, ushers them upstairs. Dean kicks in the door and Sam and Dean end up saving Andrea. Just barely. So
yeah,
I thought that was kind of a neat effect, and I really liked that scene a lot.
Yeah, that I liked much better than this scene. I thought that was more. It was more of a nod to like Ghostbusters, because they have that pink goo that was like flowing into the tub and kind of tried to eat the baby. And kind of what that reminds me of, except it was Amanda and Amy Acker's character, which, I mean, she's pretty malicious, but not like a baby.
Yes, I thoroughly I enjoyed that part, and we come to find out that after they save Andrea's life, and they're looking through like yearbooks and different photographs and stuff like that, Sheriff Jake Devins and Bill Carlton and Peter were all in the same Cub Scout pack or group, and that Peter was accidentally drowned by Jake and Bill when they were kids, because they were always picking on Peter because he was the runt and the littlest one, and they took it too far and they accidentally drowned him, and letting him go into the lake, never to be found again. What did you think, Katie?
Well, I mean, I think it was due to Lucas that they even got the story out of him, because Lucas kind of was like dragging Santa and Dean and his mother along and pointed to this like mushy part of the ground, and they dug up the bike and and the sheriff came up, they confronted him, he wouldn't acknowledge the fact of what he had done, and then, his daughter goes, Did you do this?
Right.
And so that's kind of admits the whole thing and tells the whole story. And I thought that was a pretty good moment until nobody's paying attention, and then Lucas is on the pier.
Right.
And the ghost of Peter kind of like reaches for him and pulls him into the water.
Right. And I don't know if you noticed it, but there's the you could hear though the spirit talking. It's like, come play with me, come play with me. I'm like, that was that I really enjoy. There's something about in like horror movies and television shows like this where you have like a little kid's voice.
it's
super creepy. I mean, that ranks right up there with like little girls' British voices in horror movies. It just freaks me out.
Or like that squeaking of the lonely swing in the backyard.
Yes.
Love it.
Oh, but anyway, you were saying about Lucas goes down to the pier and he's about to get pulled in by Peter.
Yeah.
And
nobody pays attention to these kids when they're, you know, like, girls. They're always arguing, and that's when the accident happens.
Right.
They're arguing about something.
Right. So Sam and Dean and Andrea and the sheriff, they all see Lucas down there, and they're all running to save him, and he's about to get, he gets pulled in, but then the sheriff, he wades out into the water saying, "Peter, let my grandson go, take me, it's my fault, please let him go, just let him go," and we see the...
And Amanda's yelling, "No, no, Dad, no," and then, you know, Dean and Sam are in the water, flailing about, trying to get the...
Get Lucas back, and we see, and we finally see we don't see the spirit release Lucas, but we do see Sam or Dean pop up with Lucas in his arms, kind of like almost in a slow motion scene.
Yeah,
and then you see the sheriff Jake get pulled down, and ta-da, the end.
Yeah, it's everything saved. You know, they saved it, of course.
Right.
My other, you know, one of my issues with that scene was that, you know, like all of a sudden it was like this super deep lake. Mm-hmm. It felt like the pier was shorter than it actually was. I don't know if they shot it because the sheriff wades in and then he's up to his waist, but then it's not too far into the distance where the boys are like deep underwater.
Yeah, I didn't catch that, but that's interesting. we should also mention that in this episode, the reason why these killings have amped up was because that the dam was broken or whatever, and they couldn't, and they didn't have enough money to fix it, so they opened the spillways, and like 6 months from then, wouldn't be much of a lake. So this spirit was trying to up the body count, avenge his death as fast as possible. But, so, we see...
Yeah, because, you know, spirits are on a timeline. They have a deadline.
They've got to hit that deadline. They've got it. Deadline, no pun intended.
Sue in marketing really doesn't want to deal with it.
Yeah, it's an HR nightmare, though.
Exactly.
But, After the sheriff gives himself up, we cut to, like, I want to say the next day or so. The boys are heading out of town, and the sun's shining. You know, Andrea, played by Amy Ecker, and her son are off to see the boys and wish them well on their journey. And we see this. Now, this was just a little bit, almost too... It seemed like too fast of a conclusion for me because,
yeah,
as a kid with if this kid really was, and I'm not trying to take away from what he went through, but if this kid really had like this this PTSD and where he couldn't talk for so long, the next thing he's shouting Zeppelin rules. I thought that was kind of like it was almost too cutesy.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. I honestly think that the whole episode was kind of sloppy. I mean, there are these pieces that I really enjoy, but in the same sense, it was just, I think it was sloppy.
Yeah.
I did enjoy, like, the bromance in the car while Sam and Amanda kind of were talking, and Dean opened up to the little boy a little bit, and...
Yeah, there are about three or four, like, really kind of touching moments, and really kind of, and moments that help further cement Sam and Dean's characters and characteristics, and we see Dean for the first time. I wouldn't say opening up because he kind of opens up to the young lady in the previous episode about his father being missing. But this is the first time he talks to a kid, opens up to a kid, and tries to share more of himself with somebody else, mm-hmm. at least that the viewers see. But yeah, other than that, yeah, it wasn't my favorite episode by far, but it wasn't the worst either. But and I was doing some digging, and on Internet Movie Database, the episode rating currently is sitting at 8.1 out of 10 possible stars. So for the majority of people, give it a thumbs up. I think I give it a thumbs up. What do you give it for this episode?
I don't know, like. a thumb middle.
Thumbs in the middle, yeah. Yeah. And then getting to the songs used in the episode, there were six classic songs used in this episode. And the first one was What a Way to Go by Black Toast Music. The second was Round and Round by Rat. And who doesn't love Rat? Right.
Yeah.
I'm showing my age again, so never mind.
No, I like Rat. It's cool.
Number three, Two Days Gone by Billy Squier. Number four.
Good one.
I'm sorry?
That's another good one.
Yeah. Number four, Moving On by Bad Company. Well, gotta love Bad Company.
Yeah.
Number five, Late Night Fade by 383 Stroker. And then finally, Dead in the Water by Ellie Goulding. Now, I'm not sure about Dead in the Water. I don't know if that was... I didn't recognize that one, but the other ones, of course.
Yeah.
But
I did... I liked how they, you know... They always seem to, like, throw in some song that connects well with, like, the plot line of the story. And then, you know, round and round... Comes around, goes around.
I'll tell you why.
Exactly.
And that
kind of thing I really enjoy.
And here's another thing I noticed. I have, being such a huge fan, I have the entire series on Blu-ray and DVD. But I've been watching them on Netflix just because sometimes I'm just too damn lazy to get up, or I'm out and I can watch Netflix on my phone. And so I'm watching the episode, and especially in some of the early episodes, I mentioned this before in the first episode about how I guess they couldn't get the rights to the AC/DC song Back in Black, so they used some other, I wouldn't say more generic, but I guess just for lack of a better term, generic rock music. And they use the same thing as the boys were cutting out at the end of this episode, and there's another previous time where they use it too. And it was just like when you've seen the episode as many times as I have, and you know where the rock music cues come in, the classic rock, and then you see that not be there, it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, it definitely is missing.
Yes, but that's neither here nor there. But anyway, so I think we've talked about this episode as much as we can. Do you have anything else you'd like to add, Katie?
No, not really. I think we've been pretty thorough with it.
Oh, great. All right, so I give it a slight thumbs up. Katie, you're a thumbs kind of in the middle kind of gal for this episode. So, now, before we tackle Sam and Dean performing a full-on exorcism at 30,000 feet, let's pause for a quick commercial break.
Hey guys, what are you doing?
Sit down, man. Crack a beer. I'm just telling Feeler about how Vlad the Impaler used to shove steaks up donkeys' asses.
Dude, this dude is so fucking gross, but it's so fucking awesome.
It sure is, buddy.
If you want to learn about everything from Vlad the Impaler to anime to rap feuds, join us here at the Junk Drawer Podcast.
That's right. Crack a beer, learn a little, and we'll talk about...
our junk!
Yeah, we're going to do that.
You can find us at thedrunkdrawerpod.podbean.com and at thespeakeasypodcastnetwork.tumblr.com. Also, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, fantastic. Now let's roll that original promo from The Phantom Traveler.
Next Tuesday,
we're getting on that plane.
I kind of have this problem with flying.
It begins like any other flight.
This plane is going to crash.
It will end with an exorcism at 30,000 feet.
Hey, man, I know what happened to your girlfriend.
The new series, Supernatural, next week on the WB Tuesday.
Oh man, there's just something about exorcisms and stuff like that, and then you throw it on a plane. Holy guacamole! That's got my they've got my number for this episode. So The Phantom Traveler, directed by Robert Singer, written by Richard Hateman, with an original air date of October 4th, 2005.
So episode 4, Phantom Traveler. The brothers are asked by a man whom Dean and his father had previously rescued to investigate mysterious crash of a commercial plane that left only 7 survivors, with signs pointing to a demonically possessed passenger causing the accident. When they realize that the demon is now eliminating the survivors one by one, Dean is forced to face his fear of flying by following its next target, Jamie Ray Newman, abroad an airliner. He and Sam manage to get the demon into the galley on board, but it flees its host during the exorcism. Despite this, they continue the ritual, sending the demon back to hell. Afterwards, they get a surprise when the man who called them reveals he got their phone number from their father's voicemail. So John doesn't answer when they call. They get their first indication that he's alive, as his phone has been down since his disappearance.
Ooh.
I know, right? That's like a big deal.
Yeah. And we should mention that all of these synopsises that we're reading are from Wikipedia, so kudos to them for writing it up so we don't have to.
Yeah, no, and they do a pretty thorough job. And
yes.
I don't know. They do a good job. Good job.
Yes. Wikipedia. Now, in my opinion, I'm going to be straight up, The Phantom Traveler is probably, out of the first four or five episodes, probably my favorite episode other than the pilot. I don't know how you feel about this episode, but it's definitely a lot stronger episode than episode three.
Yes.
And why I do like episode two, I there's just something, again, about an exorcism in an airplane. I just thought it was both very creative, and I really enjoyed that, because one of my favorite movies was The Exorcist as a young lad growing up. So anything where you get to see them exorcising something, and this is the first time we see the boys actually recite the Latin phrases and try to save somebody.
From the demonic possession. It's a hot mess.
Yes, it doesn't go smoothly.
Now, which, I mean, it's like, and they do it so, it's so bad, but they do that so well.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, you could tell that they're not 100% on their game. I mean, their Latin is fine, but there's just a lot of mishaps that happen.
Yeah,
and I have to say that I really one of my favorite moments in this film or in this episode was where we come to find out that Dean hates to fly. He goes, "Why do you think I drive everywhere, dude? I don't like to fly." Oh, but yes. I thought that was very cool. We learned that this demon that possesses these people on the airline, it searches out for weaknesses, people with their weaknesses, that a chink in the armor, as they say.
Somebody who's like suffering or like ill or whatever, but that's how they get in. Which they don't talk about that too much throughout the series.
Yes. Here's the thing. It's we learn that being fearful or nervous leaves you open to demonic possession. So with the first flyer that was, I believe, a dentist going to Denver for a conference, he was extremely nervous about a nervous flyer, and he's possessed like in the airport bathroom, and about 40 minutes into the flight, he opens the emergency door and crashes the plane, which is crazy because there's like, they think they said there's like 2 tons of pressure against that door in flight, and even if somebody roided out of their mind wouldn't be able to open that. So we learn about that a lot, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Don't open the door when you're in mid flight.
Yeah, of course.
And not unless you have a parachute.
What's that?
Not unless you have a parachute.
Yeah.
Or a big yellow raft, you know, Indiana Jones style.
Right. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just picturing Dr. Jones and little Short Round jumping out of an airplane on the raft. No time for moments, Dr. Jones.
I know, right? Exactly. Well, and you don't even have Short Round, which is Kevin Tran, and later, and way later in the series. So.
Yes, yes.
Eventually.
That's eight seasons down the line.
Yeah, it is 8 seasons.
Oh, good. And that was just right off the top of my head.
Good job.
So, like we said, we this is the first time we see this being a weakness. It leaves you open for demonic possessions, and that the dentist was wide open to demonic possessions because he was so nervous, and when they were interviewing, when the boys were interviewing his wife, she said that he had an ulcer. So he definitely a nervous flyer. And then we learned that there's 7 survivors. I believe the guy's name that the boys get in contact with, Jerry, who was cleaning up the wreckage flight, and he calls Dean and tells him that this
is your kind of thing.
Yeah, this is your kind of thing, and that the boys helped them out on almost another poltergeist kind of issue previously. I thought that was pretty cool, and I'm referencing another great horror movie that I loved as growing up as a kid, Poltergeist. We learned that the waitress, but the airline stewardess, Amanda, I believe, and Chuck Lambert, who was the pilot, and there was another gentleman who was sitting right behind the person who was possessed, they survived. So the boys head out to see the survivor. He's talking, and they were talking to him. He was like, "You checked in voluntarily. Why is that?" He goes, "Because I just survived a plane crash, and what I saw, I can't be explained." And he doesn't really. And at first, he doesn't want to talk to him about it. But the boys probe him, and he's like, "Yeah, he was just a normal guy. You know, he opened the door like it was nothing, but he had these black eyes." And with that, and with the sulfur that they found at the wreckage, they say, "All right, it's got to be some sort of demonic possession." Yeah. But then they try to figure out if it actually possessed a person, or if it possessed that flight, or if it was something along those lines. But they don't know just yet.
They have asked the guy, I think it was Sam, has said, while they were questioning him, did you notice, was he like fading in and out, or, was he just kind of flickering? And he's like, "No, man, he's a regular dude. What are you, insane?"
Right. Should you be in here?
Exactly. Coming from somebody who's...
The boys finish up their interview with Max Jeffy. So the boys are going back and forth, and they're talking to...
Jerry.
And they actually break into the hangar, because Jerry doesn't have clearance, but they find out where the airplane's at, and they go to inspect the wreckage. And what I really like is that back in 2005, Homeland Security was pretty new. So they actually go to like one of these Photoshop places, and Dean makes these badges for them to get in. That's the Department of Homeland Security. I love that the fact that they had to go rent like suits from a prom place. and Dean comes out and he goes, "Man, I feel like a idiot in this suit." He goes, "Oh, you look like a kid going to his prom."
Oh no, his
8th grade dance, there you go. And so basically they're talking between each other, and they're like, "Yeah, Department of Homeland Security, that's pretty, illegal. That's pretty out there even for us." He goes, "Well, it's something that they haven't seen 1,000 times. You know, we'll be okay."
Right.
So they get into the hangar, and they're inspecting everything, and the real Department of Homeland Security shows up.
That's where they got themselves.
Yes, and so obviously the boys always 10 seconds ahead of the fuzz escape over a fence using the said suits as protection against the barbed wire.
Yeah, it's like the
monkey
suit is actually good for something.
Right. And we come to find out that Chuck Lambert, one of the pilots, is actually going up for the first time with his friend to get tested and, I guess, recertified to be cleared so he could return back to work. And obviously Chuck Lambert's a little nervous, and the demon possesses Chuck Lambert. And I'll go up in this little Cessna airplane, and 40 minutes into the flight with the flight instructor, Chuck crashes the plane, and he uses the same tagline. The demon uses the same tagline as he used with the dentist, saying, "Oh, 40 minutes up, boy, time really flies," and crashes the airplane into, what was the town, Katie, that the plane crashes into?
Oh, crud. They have the sign, and it says 3 next to it while you're watching the show.
You're going to kick yourself. Nazareth.
Nazareth.
And the boys and everybody goes, we'll try to ignore the irony in that.
Right.
Oh, my God. So poor Chuck doesn't make it, and then we find out that actually Amy, the flight attendant, or Amanda, is going back up in the air, and is going to be taking off soon. And they need to get a hold of her because the demon, we come to find out, tells them that there's no survivors supposed to be on this airplane.
Yeah, that's what they hear when they're checking, like, so they're going through some of the stuff, and they hear that.
Yeah, the black box recording.
Survivors.
Yes.
Like that creepy thing that you like.
So Max Jaffe is okay because he's pretty much not going anywhere anytime soon. Chuck has just been killed, and so fear that Amanda is going to be next. And they would be correct. And the boys race to the airport, and they're trying to get Amanda from getting on the airplane, doing everything they possibly can. They call her on the phone and have her paged over the intercom in the airport.
Yeah.
And they try to make it up as an ex-boyfriend's friend calling to to smooth things over.
So they were calling and they were saying how it was like, this is Dr. So and so, and your sister's in the hospital. And
right.
She's like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just talked to her. She's not in the hospital. Who is this?
Yeah, she's studying for finals. I literally got off the phone with her like 2 minutes ago.
and she's like, is this a friend of Vince's?
Right, right. And then Dean's like, yeah, guilty as charged, but he really messed up. Blah, blah, blah. Just, she's like, I gotta go.
I'll call him when I get to home. You won't be calling him.
So then that's when we find out when Dean doesn't like to fly, like we mentioned previously. Because, some of the best bits are just between the give and take between Sam and Dean, and they're in the airport, and and Sam's like, well, we just have to get on the flight. I'll go by myself if you don't want to go. He's like, why are you scared to fly? What are you, nervous? Kind of like, are you a chicken? He's like, yeah, why do you think I drive everywhere? I don't like to fly, ever. and
that's like those little moments between them, because he's not going to admit that to anybody else.
Yeah.
And it's like these little quippy things between brothers. It's kind of funny.
Yes.
I'm not going to do that.
Exactly. So Dean's bickering back and forth and trying to figure out the best possible way to go about this. And he's like, all right, well, Dean, if you don't want to go, I'll go, but do this by myself. You don't have to be a part of this. He goes, no, I'm going to be a part of this. We got to do this together. He's like, okay, you go into the trunk, get anything that can get past security. So they get up into the, so they, they're on the airplane, and you can see Dean's already white knuckling it, and they haven't even taken off yet.
I know. And Sam's trying to tell him to relax, so he'll leave himself open to the
right
session.
Yeah. Can you still the touchy feely crap? Sam was like,
yeah.
You need to calm down because you just said you're leaving yourself wide open to demonic possession.
Yeah. He always puts like and he said something about his New Age yoga crap, I think.
Right. Yes.
And I love how he's always kind of like digging him on like how crunchy he is,
Yes. And so they finally take off, right? And they actually have like this like running clock. Like, okay, we've got 35 minutes between or 37 minutes before this plane before it goes critical in here. So they're trying to figure out the best possible way. They don't know who's the demon's possessing. So they walk through with one of his EMF homemade EMF recorders, like the Walkman. Yeah, which we learned from the airport hangar that Dean created an EMF device out of an old Sony Walkman. So he's going up and down the aisles with this with his Walkman, and he's like trying to like
sweeping it over everybody.
Right, trying to be inconspicuous about it, and
getting some weird look.
Yeah, he doesn't get anything, and they literally cannot find this thing. They searched the whole plane. They even talked to Amanda at one point, and Dean's like, she goes, for someone who just survived like a horrendous plane crash, and she, back at work so soon, she's like like nothing even happened. You know, she's like aces. She's great. She's not nervous. She's not scared. She's not possessed at all. And
yeah, they said that she's probably the most well-adjusted person on the plane.
Right, there you go. That's the direct quote. And before that, they're talking. Sam goes up to Dean. He goes. Oh, there's a way we could test to make sure Amanda's not, you know, possessed. He's like, he brings out the holy water. He goes, no. We can go more subtle. It's like, just mention. Mention the word God. He's like, all right, it's got to be in Latin. He goes, all right, dude, I'm not dumb. And he goes, it's Christ, like you said, Christo. And he goes, I'm not stupid, dude. So it turns who's actually possessed, Katie? They find out.
Oh, and so he comes out, like you see it. He comes out of the bathroom. It's the co-pilot. Ooh. And he flashes his black eyes, and then you know Dean and Sam tell this girl that you have to get him out of the cockpit. It just tell him whatever. Tell him whatever you have to.
Yeah,
there's something broken.
Yeah,
and so. They pull him out and they put him behind like this curtain in the back and they start like pounding on him and she's like, I thought you were just going to talk to them. You know, and they're like, well, we will, you know, but then they're spraying holy water on him and she's horrified.
Yeah, because it's burning like acid, you know.
Yeah, stuff sizzling and everything, and that's when they start to fumble with that exorcism. It goes a little sideways for them.
Yeah, and basically what happens is they exorcise the demon out of the human, but they don't kill it. It escapes, they don't exorcise it out of the human, out of the co-pilot. He escapes out of the co-pilot and into the ventilation system of the airplane, and then we see the airplane start to lose all its power and start to crash and acting possessed. And we see Sam lose a journal and as the plane's going down, the journal gets away from him, so he's chasing after the journal. He gets the journal, he's reciting the Latin, and he finally sends the evil spirit back to hell. The airplane regains its power and they save everyone on board.
Yeah, spectacularly done.
Yes, and just another average day at the office for the boys. Uh-huh.
And then, you know, they've got, like, everybody there at the terminal afterwards, and what was it, Amy's giving her statement.
Yeah, Amanda's giving the statement, kind of like, kind of nodding and saying that you know, everything's cool, you know, she's going to keep their secret or whatever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. This, for me, was the... This episode marked the beginning of like a very good string of good episodes coming up that we're going to be reviewing, and I don't know what it is about this one that's about this episode, but it's definitely a tops for me. I wouldn't say it's my top like five episode or top 10 episodes a season, but it's definitely very good.
It is a good one. I think that they did like they really like rallied from that last episode number 3, and they came back to do a solid job. I watched this episode. I actually watched it today with my kids, and my kids loved it. And I think that's saying a lot, because if they're not interested, they're not going to be interested. And I would definitely give this, like, you know, a good thumbs up.
Yeah. There's really no kind of lull in this episode at all. I mean, it's all fast paced. It keeps it moving. I mean. And I think that's...
Even when it's not fast-paced, like when they're talking to Jared and they're doing, like, their thing, it's not fast, but it's still engaging, you know?
Yes. The dialogue is snappy. It feels... The pacing is good. And I believe that's a direct credit to the director of this episode, Robert Singer, who... This is the first time he was directing for the series here, and he does a phenomenal job with this episode.
Yeah, and you see a lot of great things come from him moving forward. It's just...
Hell, he's such a big part of the show, they even named Bobby Singer after him, the character that will be appearing very shortly for the first time in season one.
Oh, yeah, and they make reference to that, like, the writer putting himself into the show. They kind of make fun of that later.
Much later. Oh,
I think that was, like, season 5 or 6, maybe.
Yeah, yes, yes. That's the end of season 5, yes. And we'll eventually get there. Promise. But yeah, I want to say that the rating on Internet Movie Database is 8.3 out of 10 stars. I totally give this episode a thumbs up. I don't know about you, Katie.
Absolutely. Absolutely thumbs up. I think I am surprised that this is an 8.3 compared to the last episode, which was only like an 8.1.
Right.
And this one I think was like better. Better executed. The dialogue was well written. I just, everything was better.
Yep. Well, that's the user rate. That's the wonderful user raters at the Internet Movie Database. So.
Faster.
So after the boys we get out of the airport and are on their way, we learn, like you mentioned in the synopsis, that Jerry's talking to Dean and Sam, and they're like, he's like, and Dean's like, hey, well, how did you, you know, I meant to ask you, how did you get my phone number? You know, I've only had this phone for like 6 months. And he's like, well, I called John's phone number and he told me to call this number. And the boys are a little bit thrown by that. And the,
like, you talked to our dad?
And like, no, he just said if you need trouble, if you're in trouble, call, you know, Dean. So they actually call the number, and I think they even reveal the number at one point. Yes, they do. They say the number. And I remember when this episode first premiered, if you actually called that number, you'd get the voice recording of John Winchester saying,
"If you need me, call Dean instead."
Yes. If you need help, call Dean at this number. And I just thought that was really cool. And I, for shits and giggles, I actually called the number recently, and it's disconnected.
Oh, bummer.
I thought it'd been kind of cool to have John Winchester tell me to call Dean.
Yeah, it's not John Winchester anymore. It's Negan.
Yeah, Negan. Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
My favorite.
But anyway, so the boys call them, and we realize that, like you said in the synopsis, that it's an indication that he's alive and that he's well. Or he's alive. Doesn't know if he's well, but he's alive at least.
Yeah, he sounds well.
Yes.
That's later to be determined.
So the boys know that they're on the right track, so to speak, even though they haven't really made any headway. But
they know their dad's alive, and that gives them purpose.
Right, it's a driving motivator, because you feel over the last couple episodes that there's got to be something. There's got to be a little bit. They still got to chase that carrot. They still got to chase that. You know, there's got to be something for them to latch onto.
And they need faith.
Right, there you go. Another episode. Name of an episode coming up. So yes, they need to keep faith. So I thought that was very good. Very good. So we both give this a thumbs up. Is there anything else you would like to add, Katie? I mean, I don't really have much else to say.
No, I just, I like the whole cast. What was his name? Brian Markison, who played with Jerry.
Yes.
Has been in another one of my shows I like, is Continuum. And then, Jamie Ray Newman, who is in a Eureka, which was another kind of like science fiction show that I really enjoy. Yes. And then more recently, she was in The Punisher.
The Punisher. Yes.
Yeah.
That's something I really have to watch. It's in my queue, and it's in my Netflix queue, but I really have to get on top of that. I'm still in the middle of Luke Cage.
Oh yeah, get on top of that, just like Mark.
Yeah. Oh God! Anyway,
if you follow our feed on Facebook, you'll know what we're talking about. If you don't worry about it. Yeah, you're not missing a whole lot.
Yeah, it's a little inside joke, but yes. So anyway, there are seven classic rock songs used in this episode. Let's see if you can guess them. I won't do that to you. The songs used in this episode was One Working Man by Rush, which is a good one. Paranoid by Black, number two, Paranoid by Black Sabbath. Three, Riot Time by Power Man 5000. Four, Hunger, played by The Stiff Kittens UK. Number five, Some Kind of Monster by Metallica. Six, Load Rage by Blue Sarko. And then number 7, Tears in Their Beers by Jay Gruska. So those are the 7 songs used in The Phantom Traveler. So if you want to look those up and put them on your iTunes, go ahead and do so. That's what I'll be doing later.
Yeah, it gives you a little extra bonus. It kind of, the songs on the episode, you know, it's giving you a little like, oh yeah, I really like that song. I'm going to go ahead and put that up on, you know, my playlist. It's nice.
Yes.
But they have so much music within the show.
Right. And if you guys are interested in finding out every single song up until, like, I want to say about the last or 2 weeks ago, the last 2 episodes of Supernatural, let me find that.
Doing something.
Yes. I'm halfway right.
So, yeah. That's what your wife says.
Yes, that's what she said. if you're interested to find out, go to tunefind.com and type in Supernatural. They've got every single song you could think of that was used in the series on this website. So it'll help you in your search.
Yeah, 13 years worth of music. That's all pretty good.
Yeah, there's only about a bazillion songs.
That's all you need when you're at the gym, is the soundtrack to Supernatural.
There you go. I do have I have the soundtrack to Supernatural, but it's the musical score, not the soundtrack. So I didn't read it all the way when I first ordered it a few years ago, and I'm like, oh, I should have really read the fine print. But yeah, there is a CD out there for all you Supernatural fans. It covers the first 5 seasons of the show. So if you like musical scores and you love Supernatural, it's worth having in your collection. But that's all I have. So, is there anything else to add, Katie?
No, I'm good. After I've already added 20, I think.
Is there anything more you want to add?
I think I contributed quite enough.
Ooh.
People are probably tired of hearing me talk.
That's what we always like. We love giving 110%.
Oh yeah, always.
Oh, in the next exciting episode 3, if you guys want to play along at home, we'll be covering episode 5, Bloody Mary, and episode 6, Skin. So stay tuned to that. And if you'd like to drop us a note, you can at menofletterssupernatural@gmail.com. Okay, guys, before we head on out of here, we hope all of our listeners check out the other great podcasts at the Speakeasy Podcast Network. Tonight you heard commercials from Sequel This and the Junk Drawer Podcast. But we have a lot of other great shows, such as our 2 video game podcasts, Throwing the Controller and Fighting Words. But we also have the Mark and Ken Video Store Podcast. And if you're listening to this, probably, maybe, possibly, you've heard of That Horror Show Podcast with me and Chris Koenig, covering the horror movie genre the best we can. Anywho, that's my not-so-subtle plug for the network that we love, and we hope you will love, too. So be sure to check out the Speakeasy Podcast Network at thespeakeasypodcastnetwork.tumblr.com. And find and like the Speakeasy Podcast Network on Facebook. Thanks, guys, and good night.